Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Love them or hate them, you can't have Christmas without Christmas carols. But there are some that we love more than others. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's Christmas Eve, and we're looking at different types of music for the holiday today. In a while, Yo-Yo Ma joins us to share his surprising new holiday album. But first, think you know your Christmas carols? Your Silent Nights from your Come All Ye Faithfuls? Well, you may be surprised by a new ranking of the 50 greatest carols chosen by 50 experts. At number one is this carol, In the Bleak Midwinter, based on an 1872 poem by Christina Rossetti. Others in the top 10 include In Dulce Jubilo and O Come All Ye Faithful. So, what makes a great carol? Joining us with some answers is Oliver Condy, the editor of BBC Music Magazine, which published the poll in its December issue. Oliver, happy holidays. Welcome back to Soundcheck.
Happy holidays to you, too.
So why, I mean, In the Bleak Midwinter, the title alone suggests the antithesis of the festive nature of Christmas. What makes this the top carol?
It's such a beautiful synthesis of words and music. Christina Rossetti's poem really conjures up that chilly winter. You know all about that in New York, certainly. Frosty wind made moan, earth stood hard as iron. I think we all like to be cold, we all dream of this white Christmas for the simple reason we all like to be wrapped up warm. And of course the music is absolutely beautiful. Harold Dark's very simple yet very evocative music as well. They just work so well together. And I think there's a very sort of English, almost melancholy there. I think there's a real stateliness in the music, and I think we quite like that as the English.
Well, and there certainly are a number of Englishmen among the 50 experts, the panel who chose these carols, a number of Americans as well, but it seems like they're all choir masters. So what was the criteria that was used to generate this list?
We basically wanted to approach 50 people who were experts at choosing music for the traditional, what has now become the traditional nine lessons and carols. So they were pieces of music that we asked them to choose that were really close to their heart, and we asked them to choose the top five carols they A, enjoyed listening to, and B, really enjoyed conducting. And I suppose that means that they're really enjoyable to sing as well. And then, you know, a carol that is well constructed and well written will be good to sing. So we just wanted to choose as many people as we possibly could from the cathedrals in Britain, but we also wanted a good representation of the major churches in America. So we basically went for all, basically, and got as many as we possibly could.
Now, the idea of carols as something that people sing, I mean, Christmas is, for many people, about singing along. Can people sing along to In the Bleak Midwinter?
They can't really. Of course, there is that Holst version, the hymn that people can sing along to, but it was the Harold Dark one that the choir masters chose. And yes, of course, in O Come All Ye Faithful, you would expect to be a lot higher than number eight in the chart. And yes, it's true, you can't sing along to many of these, but this is really an experts chart. This is really a choir chart, and that's why there's such a broad mix of carols within it.
So that you do have O Come All Ye Faithful at number eight. Missing from the top 50 entirely are The Holly and the Ivy, I Saw Three Ships, The 12 Days of Christmas, Mercifully Missing. why are some of the most famous and most beloved Christmas songs not on the list?
Well, I think While Shepherds Watched is quite, I think it's not the most interesting of carols. It's six verses. The tune is very short. There aren't famous arrangements of it that make it a bit more exciting to sing. So that one's out. The Holly and the Ivy, well, the Sands Day Carol is already in there. So there's a sort of similar theme there. And I think Holly and the Ivy is less interesting of the two. I Saw Three Ships. I don't know. It's one of my favourites, actually. It's a really lovely carol, and I was quite surprised not to see it in there. I mean, you don't hear it that often, actually, I must admit.
Did you get to vote?
I didn't get to vote, actually. I had my own secret vote, which I got out at the end of it. No, I excluded myself from that particular one. But I was pleased to see Bethlehem Dan number four. That would have been my number one, I think. But
you know, it's funny. I was shocked to see Bethlehem Down at number four. It is my favorite carol as well. And I just thought, you know, it'll probably, given all the English, you know, people voting on this panel, it'll probably be somewhere around 40 or 50. And to see it at number four, I mean, this is by the composer who wrote under the name Peter Warlock. And it's a really interesting song. I had no idea until reading your article in the BBC Music magazine, though, of the story behind it.
It's a great story, isn't it? Yes, well, Peter Warlock and his journalist friend Bruce Blunt, they were fond of a drink or two in Chelsea, and their drinking needed subsidising somewhat. So they entered a carol competition in 1927, Daily Telegraph, the British newspaper, and they won, and they spent the money on a great big booze up round London town. It's hilarious. But the music is just so, as you say, so beautiful and so interesting to sing, and the poetry, although it's probably dashed off on the back of an envelope, is so thoughtful and reflective. It's almost got an ancient quality to it, and it flows so well. And again, it's got this real English melancholy, you know, almost like those themes you hear in the big Elgar symphonies or those Walton coronation anthems, you know, the big stateliness that you get. Very introspective, but very beautiful.
And there is this kind of foreshadowing of the tragedy to come 30-odd years later. But for now, for tonight, it's about being warm in Mary's embrace. I mean, it's just, you know, it really does go back to what you were saying about in the bleak midwinter. There's something both melancholy and very comforting about the song.
There is, but it's very haunting, Bethlehem Down. If you go to the final verse, talks about that foreseeing of the crucifixion, and Warlock changes the harmonies ever so slightly to put a few more chromaticisms in, and it really haunts you and really, really affects you. And I think for a listener that doesn't really know the intricacies of that harmony, it really takes you by surprise. It's a wonderful, wonderful piece.
Let's hear a little bit of Bethlehem Down by the English composer Peter Warlock. He was also a critic. His real name was Philip Heseltine, but as Peter Warlock, he wrote this beautiful carol, which is at number four on the BBC Music Magazine's list of the 50 greatest carols. We're speaking with the editor, Oliver Condy. Here's a little bit of Bethlehem Down. Bethlehem Down is the name of that extraordinary Christmas carol. Oliver Condy of the BBC Music Magazine told us it was perhaps his favorite. It's definitely my favorite. But I was still surprised, Oliver, to see it, as I say, at number four on your experts list. We just heard Chanticleer, the American choir, performing a little bit of it. In terms of places two and three, in second place was In Dulce Jubilo, well-known tune, which is quite ancient. What is it about this? I mean, this is a song that has traveled, you know, across geographic and linguistic borders. What gives it its staying power?
I think it's a very beautiful piece for starters. Bach used it several times in chorale preludes. It's a very, very ancient German tune. Those ancient German hymns seem to have real staying power. They do seem to have a real solidity about them. And the arrangement by an English composer, Pearsall, is very luscious, very romantic. So there's this real drawing together of this ancient hymn tune and this very sort of 19th century arrangement. It just seems to work. And Mike Oldfield revived it for his 1975 hit, I think it was then, for his In Dulce Jubilo. So it gets the odd airing now and again.
Right.
So I think it's always in people's minds. It's very cheerful as well.
So it did have its moment in the progressive rock sunshine in the mid-70s when Mike Oldfield was at the height of his popularity. But it's the R.L. Pearsall arrangement that was voted the second best Christmas carol of them all in the BBC Music Magazine's poll. Let's hear a little bit. In Dulce Jubilo is an ancient German tune, but it has become a well-known Christmas carol in the English-speaking world and voted number 2 on the BBC Music Magazine's list of the 50 greatest carols chosen by a panel of 50 experts. Oliver Condy is the editor of BBC Music Magazine, joining us from the BBC studios in London. And Soundcheck listeners, let us know what your favorite Christmas carol is. You can go to the Soundcheck page of our website at WNYC.org. And Oliver, some of the old favorites are certainly here. Silent Night is at number 25, and God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen is at 22. We mentioned that in the top 10 you find O Come All Ye Faithful. But it really does seem to be kind of a specific list to the world of choral music.
It does, and it's funny you mentioned Silent Night at 25. Usually in charts, Silent Night comes out as top if you ask the public what their favourite carol is. Now, I don't know whether that's something that springs to people's mind, you know, the idea of people around a Christmas tree or out in the street or going carolling. But it is interesting how Silent Night is only at number 25, halfway through. And of course, very surprising, Once in Royal David City is at number 11, which is, again, a big surprise. And I've had quite a lot of stick from some of our readers, but of course it's you know, this is an experts panel, and as I said before, so these really are pieces of music the choir masters just really love conducting and really love, and of course it's the quality of the music and the quality of the words. Number 3, Spotless Rose, is a wonderful carol, but nobody would have, well, hardly any of the listening public would have heard of it. But that, of course, makes it interesting and varied. It means they can go out and explore and go and discover this wonderful, wonderful music.
And as Peter Warlock wrote his beautiful hymn after a night of carousing in Chelsea, you write that Herbert Howells wrote this piece while watching trains from his cottage window.
Yes, between Bristol and Gloucester. It's an interesting one, actually. Howells, like some of the other composers, John Rutter included, were non-believers. And Herbert Howells in particular, very surprising he was a non-believer, given that most of his output is ecclesiastical. And he wrote specifically for spaces. So when he wrote things like the St. Paul's service or the New College service, they were written for those particular buildings. And this piece of music, you know, is on the surface written by someone who has a deep commitment to the Christian faith, and yet Herbert Howells was someone who really eschewed it, really moved as far away as possible from worshipping as he possibly could, and yet here's one of the finest carols that's ever been written. John Rutter appears, I think he appears twice in the chart, again, a similar story, he just doesn't believe, but is entirely swayed by the extreme beauty of the music and the buildings and the art in the Christian faith. So I find that a very, very interesting, I just find it fascinating.
Yeah. So why do you think, well, I mean, what drove Howells to write all of this church music? Was it simply practical? You know, this paid the rent?
He started writing orchestral music, and then he showed his writing to, I forget who he showed it to, who turned around and said, no, you shouldn't be doing this. This isn't great music. He absolutely lost confidence in his church music writing. Also, in about 1935, I think it was, his young son, who was aged 9, died of meningitis. And that really as it would do, completely put him on just removed him completely from society. And he sought solace in writing church music. I think it was a lot more simple, and that's, you know, that's why he really stayed into church music.
The song is A Spotless Rose, and it's the bronze medalist. It's in the number 3 slot in the BBC Music Magazine's poll of the top 50 Christmas carols. And we're speaking with Oliver Condy, who is the editor of BBC Music Magazine. Of A Spotless Rose by the English composer Herbert Howells, setting an anonymous German text. That is at number 3 on the BBC Music Magazine's poll of the top 50, the 50 greatest Christmas carols of them all, featured in the December issue. In a moment, we'll have more of our conversation with Oliver Condy, joining us from the BBC studios in London. And in a little while, cellist Yo-Yo Ma will join us here in our soundcheck studio to share some of his surprising new holiday record. You're listening to Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for joining us on this Christmas Eve. Yo-Yo Ma will be joining us shortly, but we continue our conversation now with Oliver Condy, who is editor of the BBC Music Magazine. Their December issue has a new ranking of the 50 greatest carols, chosen by 50 experts, music directors mostly, of various cathedral choirs in the UK and the US. And I suppose, Oliver, I should ask you, how do we define a carol? I mean, there are some motets in your top 50, so, you know, how finely are we defining our terms here?
Well, it's very wide subject, and there's a very sort of peppered past that the carol has had. It was, I think, it's 12th century the carol first started coming in from the French carolé, which is to sort of dance, really. But the dancing soon involved singing and lyrics, and so this the carol started being written in the English church up until the Reformation, and then it sort of died out, really. And then the Puritans came along. Oliver Cromwell banned religious festivities, so that they died out then. So the carol only really came into popular being really in the 19th century. And many of these ancient ones that you see in here, things like in Deutsche Jubilo, as I said earlier, have these romantic arrangements. So these are the Victorians basically arranged these ancient tunes to fit in with this 19th century flavor, if you like.
Is that why so many of them exist in these kind of big, lush choral versions?
Exactly. The Nine Lessons of Carols, as we know it now, was only thought up in about 1880, and the famous King's College, Cambridge, Nine Lessons and Carols was only started in 1918. So it's a very, very young tradition, really, in terms of what is young.
Spoken like a true Englishman. Here I'm thinking, wow, 1880. That's pretty old.
Well, not when you think of the age of some of these carols, which go back to the sort of 14th century, 15th, 16th century, you know, and here we are singing them today in a tradition that is relatively young. So what constitutes a carol? Something, I suppose, that is sung at a Christmas service, which is probably why the 12 Days of Christmas isn't in the list, because it's not sung at a Christmas service. I term that more as a Christmas song than a carol. Of course, it's very difficult in these days, particularly in England, where fewer and fewer people are going to church on Christmas Day or at any time of the year, and of course everyone thinks of a carol as something that is just played around the shops or the shopping mall or something like that. So so it's quite a wide spectrum that I think the term carol covers.
So but for purposes of your poll, it's sacred as opposed to secular music. No matter how good a song it might be, Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer was never going to make it onto this list.
No, no. Sadly, I say not. But you don't get any Paul McCartney either in there, sadly. But I think the Nine Lesson Carols is a wonderful template and is a wonderful way of bringing the Christmas music together in a wonderfully thought out service. And we basically asked the choir masters to put this list together. So that's why they're all liturgical.
Okay. Now, I mentioned before there are some motets. Francis Poulenc, the French composer, wrote a series of four of these Christmas motets. Three of them make it onto the list, including at number 13, O Magnum Mysterium. So they are motets, which is a form that musicologists can define for you. But are these also carols?
Oh, difficult one. I think they probably would be carols because they would be sung in the Nine Lessons and Carols service. So, yes, I think it is a carol. I mean, Poulenc is another one of these non-believers. But because it's sung so much in the British tradition, and I assume in the large churches over in America as well, that is safely a carol, I think.
Right.
It's not. I mean, people listening, the public listening to this probably won't know O Magnum Mysterium. So it's not really a carol in that sort of modern term, but I think for these purposes it most definitely is.
So it won't be blaring out of the loudspeakers in the neighborhood store.
Well, I hope it will, because it's a very beautiful piece. But
certainly would be better than a lot of the noise pollution we hear at holiday time. Poulenc's O Magnum Mysterium. This is at number 13 on the BBC Music Magazine's list of the 50 greatest carols. Music there from the French composer Francis Poulenc. O Magnum Mysterium is one of his Christmas motets. Three of them are on the BBC Music Magazine's ranking of the 50 greatest carols, chosen by a panel of 50 experts. We're speaking with Oliver Condy, the editor of BBC Music Magazine, on this Christmas Eve. You mentioned Poulenc was another of these non-believers, although didn't he come back to the faith at a certain point later in his life?
Yeah, I ran about sort of in the 30s, middle 30s, when his friend Pierre-Octave Ferroux died. But I think Poulenc was one of these composers like Howells that wrote absolutely scintillating ecclesiastical music, and yet really was a non-believer. But yes, he wavered backwards and forwards, I think.
Now, he was not the only kind of big-name 20th-century composer to write carols. I mean, Benjamin Britten wrote a whole ceremony of them. Vaughan Williams, I mean, it's funny how many of these are English, but, you know, there are American composers as well who've dipped a toe in the waters. Is this, I guess the question is, are these occasional pieces in the literal sense of being written for a specific time, a specific place, a specific service, or, you know, is there something broader at work here?
Some of them are written for a specific service, and that's the beauty of the Nine Lessons and Carols at King's College since Stephen Cleobury took over in 1982. And then less often before that, the service has been used to showcase new writing. So it's a wonderful opportunity to revive the tradition every single year. So that's why there are so many carols in here written. You know, I think the John Rutter What Sweeter Music was written in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the whole gamut of music here, from the very ancient to the very modern. But yes, I mean, it's there is a lot of new music in here, and a lot of them were written specifically for services and will only come out once a year. I suppose that's the nature of them, really.
Right, but really, because some of them are just, you know, it's just beautiful music. It's only perhaps the text, the nature of the text that keeps it, you know, sort of shunted away to Christmas time and no other.
It does preserve them, I suppose. I suppose it means that you don't hear them all the time. I mean, you wouldn't want to sing O Little Town of Bethlehem, however, all through the year.
No.
It's kind of enough to sing it once a year. And I think with some of these choral pieces, it becomes a real treat when the choir master gets out Bethlehem Down or A Spotless Rose or the Kenneth Leighton Luli Lula. I think it's a real treat for choirs once a year to sing these very special pieces of music.
Now, you mentioned Luli Lula. There is this tradition of minor key carols, you know, kind of a musical texture that we associate with, as you said earlier, this English sense of melancholy and stuff. Why do we hear so much minor key music in the top 50 carols?
I think you summed it up yourself. I think it's that combination of that candlelit church, the sort of Gothic architecture, maybe the mood. This is sung at a carol service, so we're still in Advent, we're still leading up to Christmas Day, and of course the Lula is a Covent derived from the Coventry Carol, mm-hmm. which is dates back to the 16th century. So it's also very trying to evoke the sort of post medieval period. I think there's a certain beauty, a poignancy in the minor key. We don't like to be too jolly about things, you know, stiff upper lip and all that.
What about I Wonder As I Wander? I mean, one of the relatively few American carols on the list.
Yes, absolutely. But I'm delighted it's in there, actually. It's a beautiful piece. And it's interesting as well. There's another carol that I didn't recognize at all called No Small Wonder, music by Paul Edwards, which was chosen by Matthew Stainer, who's director of music at Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Miami. So it's wonderful to have these pieces of music that I hadn't heard in the top 50 carols. And it really does show that the tradition is renewing every single year. There's new pieces being written all the time.
So we have Sir John Taverner, Judith Weir, other contemporary composers who are represented on the list, and then, as well, this old Appalachian folk song, I Wonder As I Wander, one of the top 50 carols on the BBC Music Magazine's list.
I wonder as I wander out under the sky, how Jesus the Savior did come forth to die for poor ordinary people like you and like I. I wonder as I wander out under the sky.
That's I Wonder As I Wander, an Appalachian folk song cum Christmas carol. It is on the BBC Music Magazine's list of the 50 greatest carols, and we are speaking with Oliver Condy, the editor of the BBC Music Magazine. You had mentioned that you were surprised and had caught a little bit of flack there in the UK for Once in Royal David City being at number 11. Was the surprise that it was so low or that it was so high? I mean, this is another one of those songs that's not really known as well here in the US.
It was because it was so low down in the chart. I mean, people were expecting it to be in the top 10. And it's interesting that a number 50 is away in a manger. Now,
right here in the States, we would have expected the reverse. Yeah,
absolutely. And in fact, we know that piece to a different tune than you do. However, Away in a Manger is the carol that all kids are taught at school. It's the first carol that they learn, and they all sit round and sing it at nativity services. And there it is at number 50. It surprised me, I must admit. And See Amid the Winter Snow, and Gabriel's Message, you know, that beautiful, most highly favoured lady, is a wonderful carol. It's at number 45, so very surprising that very popular carols are back-ended up to the number up to 50 to 40, and then down at the bottom you have these very beautiful, no less beautiful, perhaps even more beautiful, but very unknown carols. So it's a very interesting sort of reversal. It's almost as if they've sorted the public poll and turned it on its head. They're probably for devilment, to be perfectly honest. I suppose it's that treat at Christmas, isn't it? It's the ones that they like to get out of the folders, and they think, what do we sing this year? Right, these are the ones we adore, and these are the ones that the choir will adore too.
Well, it all sounds very serious, and yet at number 35 sits Ding Dong Merrily on High. And we'll hear a little bit of that. We've been speaking with Oliver Condy, the editor of BBC Music Magazine, about the 50 greatest carols as published in their December issue. Oliver, thank you for spending some of Christmas Eve with us. Happy holidays to you.
And to you too. Thank you.
Little bit of Ding Dong Merrily on High at number 35 on the BBC Music Magazine's list of the 50 greatest carols. And, of course, you can tell us what your favorite Christmas carol is on the soundcheck page of our website, wnyc.org. In a moment, renowned cellist Yo-Yo Ma drops by to share some of his favorite holiday music off of a new recording that might surprise you. That's coming up in just a moment. This is Soundcheck.